don't want to see you coming back in here with fucking junkies. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained junkies.
How could anybody go and sit in a pint with those boys after that?
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
Welcome to the So-Called Weaker Podcast, our weekly GAA show here on Bolts.ie. Now, we know you're here to listen to us wrestle with deep and complicated questions on philosophy and general outlook on life. So, on that topic, Mick McCarthy and Mark Farley, are you a Limerick Cork man or a Galway Clare man?
Limerick Cork, given that I only saw the second half of extra time with Clare and Galway.
You missed it!
We had a club championship match, but luckily enough, I live in Virginia and the pitch is literally right, like the back wall of my house is right beside the drive into the pitch. So we came out of the game, it was a double header, and it was the second game was just starting. And I was like, we'll hang about for this game. One of the lads was like, oh god, Clare and Galway's gone to extra time, they're in half time of extra time. So I went, well, to hell with not bright against Munchaconnacht, I'm running home. So I just ran up the drive, jumped the wall into my house, and watched the second half of the extra time.
And got a good 10 minutes, or 14 as it was.
Absolutely. Need we ask you, I guess you're
Clare Galway for me, yeah. Limerick and Cork was an exciting, exceptional, wonderful game. The first 20 minutes I was kind of, I think I tweeted like, you know, a great game actually needs good backs as well. And they didn't, I had a feeling they would come into it and did. And it became a kind of a incredibly, you know, for the highest scoring game of all time, there was some good battles across the pitch, believe it or not. But the Clare Galway game was one of the most drained I've ever been in Croke Park. Excited, was ready for the team to lose and to I probably would have cried, I would imagine, clapping them off the pitch. I think there was that I could feel that kind of coming. That day was building up to that. Yeah. But there was a few times in it that was sitting beside a kind of a Galway crowd who were quite snarky at times and a little bit kind of slagging, and they were kind of getting on you early in the game, and you know, there was a little, you know, needle is far too strong a word, but there was a little bit of kind of, you know, banter, I suppose, for want of a bit more, less disgusting word. And then as the game went on, it became more and more kind of, this is serious business here, I can't believe what we're witnessing. And then there was a lot of kind of leaning back. We're on the very, 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 very back row of the Cusack stand, like up really, really high.
Very, 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 very back row.
Very, back
very, 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 very back row.
Yeah, row Z. It literally is row Z, actually, I was surprised. Lean back against the wall kind of thing and turn around and just look around and say, geez, this is some match, lads.
Yeah.
This is some match. And that was kind of, that became the tone then, and everything was all friendly and shaking hands after, you know, after the match.
That's
and everything.
That's lovely. Jerry Canning said, some match.
Yeah. Hey. It became like that. It became, we couldn't stop talking about how great the match was rather than whether Clare were losing it or Galway were losing it.
Do you think we deserve some credit for the former Shane O'Donnell? He did a thing for us, but we did a thing with Sports Direct for Shane O'Donnell, Keane Lynch and Jamie Barron going off at hurling skills challenges against each other. And Shane missed two frees from, 21 metres out, straight in front of the posts.
One from 21.
Not once, but
oh, he did miss it twice.
Missed it twice. We went to the reshot of it. And ever since, I think he went off and went, lads, I need to sort my life out here. My accuracy isn't up to scratch. And now he's become a scoring machine.
Well, he got 3 points in.
But for Shane O'Donnell, yeah. he was usually... what would you say, a team player to his
yeah,
own?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, you're right, Jay. He's shooting well,
enough.
I suppose, yeah. I think more...
I don't think his accuracy...
I think he'd be more worried about the fact that the ball was poked out to him in the Munster final for 28 metres from goal and he hit it straight back into Anthony Nash's hand. I think that might have been where he went to sort his life out.
I would invest. I'd say it's more of his as well as that he's also shooting a lot more. He's a bit more selfish this year, which...
He played well at the weekend.
Yeah. There are a couple of tangled issues, particularly from Clare Galway, that we're going to pick through here in the show in just a minute. But we are sticking to our remit here in the So-Called Weaker Podcast and wondering why this amazing game of hurling doesn't extend to all 32 counties in Ireland. We've a pretty big back catalogue now of folk involved in hurling in those weaker counties. So we're going to hear from some of them as to some of the issues that's challenging them and why we can't spread this great game across the country. We're also, don't worry, I know you're hearing our three voices, so I know you're currently listening at home thinking, oh, none of these guys are going to tell me what actually happened in the game because they don't really know. Our resident GA nerd, Morris Brosnan, has been in the office and I chatted to him for a few minutes, so he's going to tell us exactly where those semi-finals were won and lost.
The GA super nerd. It's not that we don't know anything, it's just that we don't know anything in comparison to Morris, who knows everything.
Yeah, I feel I know nothing. Like Farley has just said, one of those games was drawn and neither won nor lost. Briefly on Clare Galway, Mick. The replay isn't hairless. I don't really get the feeling that Clare want to go there.
I, you know, me and Mark have been talking a little bit about my Twitter activity and over the last kind of few months and various different ways to not rise to the bait a lot of the time. And, you know, I've been doing quite well, I think, you know, and I was about halfway up through the Ballybock Road on the way out of the stadium when I tweeted, fuck Burns. An All-Ireland semi-final should be in Croke Park.
I love
and while I'm sorry that I reacted, I resorted to such language and anger and everything, but I still agree with that point.
And this is nothing to do with Clare's quite poor record at Thurles.
I was about to say.
Well, to beat Tipperary in Thurles this year.
I'm sure everyone bet Tip.
Okay.
Jesus. Didn't even. If the three of us got a bit, got a few hurdles between us, and Anishtetha would beat Tip.
No, I don't think so. Clare do kind of, there's an element of, you know, Croke Park being the place for Tony Kelly and Shane O'Donnell and Colm Galvin, and that seems to be the place where they thrive and have done in the years. Mm. Or they haven't been there in 5 years, you know, so.
Yeah.
I think it should. I just think it's more for the fans, to be honest. I think the players probably do deserve to play in Croke Park. They did play there next week. They have a chance to play there again if they win, both sides. And that's one thing. And no hurlers mind playing in Thurles, really, you know. I think for the fans, it's not as nice a stadium. It's an easier place to get there for both counties, but there's no tickets.
Yeah,
that's and the there tickets didn't go to clubs. Everything went out online in general sale, and it's already sold out, and it's been sold out a long time. And there was no real notice as to when they were given, which I, you know, there was just no kind of organisation there so that it made sure that real fans were able to get tickets.
Yeah, Croke Park obviously is booked up with the very important matter of Dublin against Roscommon and the Super 8s. This obsession with playing Dublin and Croke Park is now spilling in and ruining the hurling championship. There's no end.
I don't blame Dublin. I blame Roscommon. Yeah. Roscommon are at the core of this.
Should Roscommon, Mark, in your opinion, just forfeit this
exactly.
game for the good of the GAA?
The gall of Roscommon, after what we witnessed at the weekend in the Hurlitt, the gall of Roscommon to go, and actually, we booked Croke Park first, so we're playing here, and you can go off with your Mickey Mouse hurling down to wherever.
What accent is that? I want to play Devil's Advocate a little bit. I'm as much a get Dublin out of Croke Park activist zealot as anybody here, and I really, really do believe that. But I think the fixtures are made, and I like there was people genuinely saying move the Dublin game to Parnell Park,
I felt
that that was actually ridiculous. Like, yeah. I mean, the game is already set there, tickets are already on sale. The game should have been played on Bank Holiday Monday
or a double header. Croke Park. I don't know if like may, I
double
presume,
header, absolutely.
I presume the GAA might have
the under 20. I thought that originally. And then found out that the under-20 All-Ireland final is on before it.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's a problem. And yeah. Mayo are probably bringing about 30,000 people to that, to be honest.
Imagine, we should move the Mayo, move the under-20 final to Newbridge.
You'll not move in.
Move the under-20 final to 4 o'clock and honestly, just have Roscommon forfeit the game. What difference does it make?
I'm surprised Mayo fans didn't make a bigger whinabaloo about the suggestion that it'd be a doubleheader. That sounds like something they'd get like very upset about. That. How did you not know that Mayo are playing? How is making this about Mayo now all of a sudden? I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What road have we gone down here, guys?
Yeah, let's bring it back.
It's the glory of hurling. I think that's a. Is anybody sick of that yet, by the way? Are we sick of
the hurling zealots?
Yeah. The hurling zealots? The general public loving?
It got worse on Monday night then with the documentary. Like, I feel it's a nice symbolism that hurling people ram their sport down their throats, much like Cú Chulainn rammed that slitter down the hound's throat. It reached peak. I generally believe it peaked during that documentary on Monday night.
Yeah.
What do we make of it all?
The documentary?
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. It just, and this is kind of what's inspired our thing, I suppose, of the rest of this podcast is, I was like, this is a great story. But it seems to only hint at the fact that there are 8 counties in Ireland. Do you know what I'm saying? Blah, 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 Ireland, our game. It maybe, like, I don't know. It sounded like, you know, there is another code here. Not that we should have a football one, but that at least it
recognised that. We should have a football one. Why not?
That Hurling didn't take over all of Ireland. It also was strange. I didn't realise that it's kind of really It just seems to be from where the best farming ground was. That's how hurling has been so. Like, you know, everybody wonders, like, ah, yeah, sure, it was a Munster thing and it kind of spread a bit. And then lads went up to Dublin and they brought it from Munster. But it's like, no, it was a lowland, flatland, great weather, the biggest landlords in the country.
Yeah.
Sport.
That's landlords and ground. And that's I've often thought of that. I remember, like, even going through Connemara sometimes and, you know, west of Galway, west of Clare, very little hurling. You know, if you think about it, like even in hurling counties, you know, and it's just because it's rugged, rocky land that isn't suited to it. It's too windy and all this kind of stuff. So they just play football, the simpler so it's game.
A real posh sport when you think about it.
But I would wonder though, and this is actually for the two of you who obviously, like, I mean, you know, you are GA fans who watch the game and stuff like that, but wouldn't have grown up playing it or, you know, having it in your areas. There's a sense, and I wonder, does hurling snobbery and all that, another conversation of where it comes from. But I don't know if there's a primal kind of Irishness to a show like that on Monday or to the two games at the weekend, that even if it's not part of what you've done, I wonder, do you guys feel that? Yeah. You know, do you feel a kind of a primal association with hurling, even though you've never played it?
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. And, you know, I'm a bit of a snob in other elements of life, and I've tried to kind of disabuse myself of all that stuff. But it's impossible not to watch those games in Croke Park on Saturday and Sunday and realise, Jesus, how did we invent this and no one else has it? Mm. It's just, I don't know, it's this amazing Irish thing that no one has hijacked.
Yeah. What about you?
Yeah, the hurling snob thing, I think, is it's two different elements, though. There's like, you can be genuinely sick of people deciding that, you know, they keep talking about how hurling's great. But then there's also the element of just people seeing something said an awful lot on Twitter, so they have to tweet the same thing. It seemed like Sunday there was an awful lot of bandwagon people just tweeting about, oh, hurling is unbelievable, hurling's great, hurling's best sport in the world, because they wanted to get involved in the conversation about the match, but didn't really know what to say.
So yeah, I agree with that. I think there's a lot of that comes around in these things. I feel the reason that a lot of, and now I get it, like, I mean, I was with my dad on Saturday and we were together all night after, and we were talking about the match and living and dying by it. And, you know, you were talking, Mark, to James O'Connor, and he said he couldn't sleep after the game. So he was thinking about it. We were kind of like that. It was like everyone we met, we kept talking about the same few things that happened in the match. It was weird. It was like we just couldn't leave it alone, you know. Yeah. And on Sunday then, I'm at home watching the Cork match, and he is, and he just texts me like, you know, geez, there's nothing like it in the world. It's not, it actually comes from a different place than what, you know, the bandwagon jumpers. I don't know what it is. It's almost this kind of feeling of being in love with a sport that just takes you to another place. And I think people have it in all sports, but because hurling is this sort of, you know, 12 county sort of thing that isn't even a fully national sport in a small country, but we see it as this incredible thing. I think it's understandable that there is this sort of expression that comes out when something is so good.
Yeah.
And that's an argument I've been trying to get straight in my head for a while.
I think there's also an element of insecurity about it as well, in the sense that this
it comes from the same place.
I think so. It becomes a kind of a preach the mission thing. Also, I think that it's a sport, when it played at that level, and maybe this is a very naive point to make, but like those playing it and those coaching it do seem to have more respect for the sport in relation over winning at the sport than in other sports, particularly Gaelic football. So there is less cynicism, in my view, in hurling than football, because the result isn't as important as a belief and a passion and a love of the game. Is that very naive? And
No, I see where you're coming from. I think there is a kind of a lot of people will have this sort of duty to the game as well, but it doesn't stop cynicism or it within a game. Like, I mean, there's no black card in hurling because hurling people kind of say the things that you said without actually practicing them. I've seen more, like, it's a guaranteed thing now if you're running through on goal and there's a defender near enough to do that, they'll drag you down right on the edge of the box for the penalty and you'll get a 21 yard free and a yellow card. That's a guarantee. Mm. And there's no real other punishment to it, you know? Like, I mean, I kind of don't think there's any difference really in the you know, to use the word primal again, the winning instincts of
I think some of the most common things of cynicism as well, just sometimes be because of the way the game's played. Like in football, if you're a forward, every single time you're trying to get that, you know, at 5 yards, 10 yards of space to run on to the precision pass. And the most cynicism there comes from like the defender holding you, grabbing you, wrestling, blah, 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 not to do. Hurling, more often than not, the ball's going in and a 50-50 ball, you're not actually like, you know, it's nearly always a contested ball anyway. It's not, you know, you're just out.
But there's lots of little tricks as well that will happen probably in a less obvious way than they might in football at a kind of a possibly slower pace, a more closely contested thing. Like what you might do is if you're running out for that 50-50 ball that you're saying is that the forward might get a little tug to launch himself off and he's ahead and then gets more obviously tugged back to get the free in. Yeah. You know, it's a kind of, and, or holding a hurley. Every defender in Ireland holds the hurley all the time, you know?
It's very cynical.
Like,
there's also the cynicism of dropping your hurley when you're through on goal to make it look like it's been pulled out of your hands, so you might get a free. Now, I'm not accusing Aaron Gillan of that, but it was either a free in or a free out. So, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it was just like three straight days just to show you how amazing this sport can be. At times. And by the way, the good PR for hurling continued after that documentary, because RT followed up with a documentary about Sepp Blatter and FIFA. It just never ended this again. But
I'm looking forward to the rest of the documentary. I thought there was a lot of scene setting in this that was good. That was, at one stage I said, why are they talking about how great it is to win All Ireland? Sure, everyone knows that. And they did 10 minutes on it. And then Sue was like, you're a hurling snob. There's a lot of people who won't know that, who just want to watch this show because it's a documentary on RT1.
Is there also an argument, I've looked at this for both football and hurling, is like, imagine doing this documentary on like the GA championship in the mid-2000s, the football championship in the mid-2000s, even the hurling one, given that Kilkenny were so dominant, right, in 100 years time. Like, they look back on games in the 1800s, late 1800s, early 1900s. Oh, it was great. There was so much excitement. It finished 1-5 to 1-5. And it's like, these are like probably awful games.
Can you imagine how shit they were?
21
really?
To side. Lads just, no, it was all ground hurling. You couldn't pick the ball up with those hurls. So basically what you're saying is you were watching a really bad, disorganized game of field hockey where like it was just sort of it was like a cross between rugby and field hockey.
With Laurie Marr dominating with two broken ribs.
Yeah.
The game has improved, believe it or not. The big question that a lot of people find themselves asking at the end of that amazing weekend, and something that, in fairness, we have been exploring for a few months now in this podcast, is how the hell this amazing sport is on its knees in about two-thirds of the country. So we've decided to compile a few interviews that we've done throughout the run of this podcast, looking at the various issues that hurling has in the so-called weaker counties. We're going to start by listening to Philip O'Brien, who is the Louth hurling manager on the decline of the game in Louth and in his own native Meath.
Look, it's something that's been regressing throughout the length and breadth of this country, and people in Croke Park, I think, are hired. They don't realise what's going on. We're talking now about Super 8s in football, and we'll have Super 8s in hurling, and you know, we probably have Super 8s in hurling for the last number of years, but they don't realise it's there. Like hurling, like, you know, it's a fantastic game. Like, I mean, I've lived in Singapore and I was over in America. People love the game. People who see the game for the first time just can't believe what a game it is. It's a fantastic game, hurling. So is Gaelic football. That we have great games. But the problem is the likes of Louth is a county that it's not really been promoted, and I mean from Croke Park. It's not really been promoted from Croke Park. And I mean Louth and Leitrim and Longford and Monaghan's and all these counties are the same. They're not putting the effort in there to keep that game alive in the weaker counties. And it's dying. It's dying. Like, there used to be, I think, 7 or 8 clubs in Louth. Now they're down to 3 senior clubs. Like, that is a massive. Like, this only a couple of weeks ago, they lost a club called Pearse Oak pulled out this year's championship. Last year, 4 clubs took part in the championship in Louth. This year, you will have 3 clubs in the championship in Louth. That's just terrible.
Well,
like in my own county in Mead, we lost a club 2 years ago called Myla, a junior club, and I think another club could be close to going out of existence. When a club goes out of existence, it's very hard to get back on the ground again. So, I don't know what is Croke Park doing about all this? Like, what are they doing to keep the game alive? It will die in these areas. It will die in these areas. Like, I think it's struggling up and down. It's struggling in Armagh now again. I believe it's going to struggle again. A lot of these counties, like Leitrim, Longford, it's struggling in these areas. There is ways of encouraging it. Like, you know, I really think that players, inter-county players, should be given a massive tax break in some way. Because they're giving a great service to the country, to their counties, you know. But Croke Park needs to wake up, you know, and smell the roses here, yeah. You know.
Here's GA journalist Declan Bogue to give us a holistic view of the problems that have afflicted Antrim hurling.
I had a conversation with Simon McCrory, who's missing this year. He was last year's captain when they reached the Christy Ring Cup final and they got promotion in Division 2A. And I was talking about him in terms of his employment, and he was telling me he was one of two coaches that was looking after Belfast GAA. And he said that he was going into schools in North Belfast, which is an enormous nationalist population, and everyone there is concerned with Cliftonville and soccer. Cliftonville and Celtic in particular. And there were some children that when he was coaching hurling in the schools, they didn't really even know about Antrim. They knew of hurling, but they didn't even know there was a county team of Antrim. So that may be slightly cultural for a start. Mm. After that, when you look at a city the size of Belfast, like you're talking about the second biggest city in Ireland, and two people, you know, coaching in all the schools, he said that he could go into schools up the west and he could get an enormous amount of children that were interested in playing hurling, right? So that's the first thing. Hurling will be played anywhere you go. I actually, believe it or not, I'm the chairman of a local fledging hurling and camogie club we have formed here in Ballygally and Tyrone, which that is the heartland of football here in Tyrone. And yet, we started up our own training there a couple of Thursdays ago, and we're inundated. There was over 80 children at the first two training sessions. We wow. had to get inventive because we hadn't even the amount of hurlers or helmets to go around. But he was experiencing something similar in Antrim. Sam McCrory was. He was telling all the children, look, this is your local club, it's Pearson's, this is your local club, it's Rossa. And what he was finding with the smaller clubs, perhaps not Rossa, like, you know, certainly with Pearson's or St. Agnes's or whatever, was that with that many children going to their training sessions, that the club weren't even able to cater because there's a rule that you have to have a coach per 8 children. They just hadn't the numbers to even cope with that. So pretty soon, the interest would wane, and then the children would be lost again to hurling. So that's one part of it. Another part of success of county boards, people might argue that they haven't done themselves any favour. I remember a couple of years ago, Leash were playing Antrim in a qualifier, and the county board fixed a crucial relegation battle involving St. Gall's the night before. And some players, such as C.J. McGordy and others, they said they played for the club on the Friday night. What else could they do? And then when they went to the game the following day, then they were dropped from the starting team. So, you know, they are probably genuinely the only dual county in the north. People might say, well, you know, Derry have the same problems, and they do. But in terms of sheer weight of numbers and big clubs that would aspire towards senior championships, they're always going to have a club v county clash there too. If the GAA are able to part fund the coaching blitz that happened in Dublin, it's been asked, well, why would they not do the same in Antrim? Because what we have found here at this end of the world is that we have had a coach who played some hurling with Tyrone. He's a great enthusiast, but he has been out coaching in all the schools and dropping leaflets. And the children are coming because they will play hurling and they love hurling. But, you know, what do you do when you've got a sudden influx? Like, really, you have to adapt. Sam McNaughton, the Antrim hurling manager, was coaching all the schools for years, and he will voice the same concerns. Like, he would have went to Larne, right? Which is not a hurling or national stronghold by any stretch of the imagination, but he would have went to cross-community schools and that and brought hurling in. And the children took to it. And they were unbelievably enthusiastic about it because it's a game that everyone wants to play. But he found then that there was such a lack of a follow-on that generations were being rid of hurling.
Now, hurling does face the uncomfortable reality in some parts of the country that football is just the more popular and more dominant sport. To get an insight as to what it's like to be a hurler in these counties, we spoke to former Kerry captain John Tweak Griffin.
Well, obviously, look, I suppose every county has their own individual story to tell. Like, you'll have some perceived so-called stronger hurling counties, you've so-called stronger football counties. Kerry obviously was perceived as a stronger football county. I'm chairing a group at the moment, putting a plan in place for Kerry hurling, and you'd hope by the end of the plan or next year that hurling would be one of maybe even the second favourite sport of many children within the county. Like, wow. So look, it's just the way things are in Kerry. Like, there's many people in the county who love hurling, who went in for hurling. Hurling is the number one sport. Children, any child I know that has played hurling in Kerry loves playing hurling. But I suppose they get a little bit older, it gets a little bit more difficult because I suppose the pressure, external pressures, and maybe just busy with, I suppose they get so busy with at 16, 17 with exams and maybe the games program and other things, it gets quite difficult. And sometimes hurling can be maybe the one to lose out. I always make the example like of the Kerry minor footballers the last number of years. They've won the 3 or 4 in a row at this stage. But like, you had a lot of lads in that who would have, I remember coaching them at 12, 13, 14 when I worked as a GDA in the county. And I remember coaching them in primary school. Like, and they were all super hurlers, like the likes of Michal Byrne, there was Barry O'Sullivan from Dingle, and many, many more. But again, it just gets a bit more difficult. I mean, you want to compete at the top level, you really kind of have to really try to compete, I suppose, to nearly concentrate on one sport. Like, but again, like, we're doing our best in Kerry to promote hurling, like, and I think we're going in the right direction.
We've spoken about the GAA's role in all of this, but what part do the media have to play? Westmeath hurling manager Michael Ryan was very critical of the media's coverage of the second tier Joe McDonagh Cup ran off earlier this year.
Well, I don't think it's a blame. Some of the blame must go to RTE. Because at the end of the day, they didn't put the scores for some of the weeks and that thing. I didn't, yeah. You know, whatever, maybe they had enough cameras or enough reporters to go around, but surely they got a cast notes to sort the results up on the screen. And there was a few weeks they wasn't even thrown up on the screen. I suppose it's the first year of the competition. It's hard to know. It shouldn't have happened. Because, I mean, you've all those teams down there are working and training every bit as hard as everybody else. And, you know, we're all doing our 4 or 5 nights a week. We're all doing our gym sessions. So everybody's putting it in. And from a spectator point of view, the reaction from the people who have gone to the game has been very, very good. The standard has been decent. The commitment has been total. And, you know, it's something, it's well worth showing or it's well worth promoting. Maybe there should have been some kind of a deal done with TG Carr, sure, because, you know, they seem to be the only station that picks up all the pieces as far as sports concerned. But it's something that needs to be looked at going forward. We can probably forgive the fact that it's the first year of it needs to be looked at, but it certainly does need to be looked at.
Nobody counted us in all year. The media.
Where did this ferocious determination out there today come from?
The media.
So what do we make of that, lads? Can we make it a national sport?
Well, you guys might know better than I do, having come from like two staunchly football areas that don't have much hurling. It's a job of work, like, you know. But I think that there needs to be a certain decision made that it's not good enough to just have, you know, Cavan, Monaghan, Fermanagh, whatever, all these areas, Sligo, that just have, right, we're just football counties and that's it, you know, because it's not fair on, if the GAA is truly an organisation that wants to promote both sports, then children in these areas who love playing, and Declan Bogue talked about that in some of that interview, is that, you know, this is something the kids love to play, but they don't always have the opportunity to, or, you know, because of the coaching, because of the lack of expertise and stuff like that. So I think it's unfair on people around the country that they don't have the opportunity to at least play in this. One thing that I think should be done, and Martin Fogarty, who's the head of
Hurling development, yeah.
Yeah, and he mentioned this, and I've talked about it before, and it's a straightforward idea for me, is that a lot of these counties have 5 hurling clubs, 4 hurling clubs, 1 dominant hurling club, 3, 4, is to amalgamate their championships into one, like maybe it's an Ulster League, as been on before, but make that the main thing. Maybe it's even turned the county teams into these, you know, and that the representatives come from them. But, you know, if you could turn your championship into a proper team of, you know, 16 senior teams, 16 intermediate, whatever it might be, the same as any other county, but it's in a more spread out area, then you'll have proper competition and improvement instead of, you know, 3 teams in Derry playing each other, you know, or yeah. Derry's a bad example because of Slotnil and how good they've been. But, like, you know, the same 3 teams playing each other in Monaghan every year and kicking the shite out of each other and not even wanting to play and just not spreading anywhere else.
I'm not endorsing gambling here, but if anybody wants to place a bet on the Cavan Senior Hurling Championship final being Mullaghorn against Cotill this year, it's a guaranteed winner.
you know, I think there's a general goodwill there at the moment that we want to spread this around, but it needs to actually have some actions, because this is going to be forgotten about in a couple of weeks. Somebody tweeted me, actually, I don't have it in front of me who it was, but it was a really, really good point that this isn't just going to happen because of just goodwill and it wanting to happen, for loads of different reasons, but one of them being football counties and county boards and clubs don't necessarily want this to happen because it's a competitor to them.
It costs money.
And as soon as it costs money, it takes away resources and players, perhaps, you know? And if this suddenly, say Sligo suddenly has this upsurge in hurling, and Arthur did a piece on the site about them winning the Laurie Mar this year, and it's fantastic, right? But if that becomes a bigger thing where there's 8 or 9 clubs that become full-on dual clubs and they become this, you know, thriving hurling county, that's going to affect the resources that go into football in the county and the players that go into football. And I don't think that the people who run these counties are going to be interested in that happening.
Yeah.
You know?
Have you any evidence for it?
The burden proof's on you, Mark.
To do an aim and dump at it. It's one of those things that could be possible, but I haven't heard of it. Or
you've heard of things. We've heard loads of things. We've heard about like county teams not being given you know, a new set of jerseys because it took away from footballers' holiday funds, or, you know, the warm weather training and things like that. You know, there's plenty of that. And by the way, I'm sure it works the other way. This isn't a football hurling thing for me. I'm talking about a lack of, there's a self-interest there that doesn't promote this utopian thing where both sports are treated equally in every county.
Yeah. The other thing then, if that is the case, is it necessarily wrong? So if you take a county, you're talking about Sligo, blah, blah, the likes, even Carlow, as good as have, like, it's still a predominantly football county, Sligo football county, Cavan football county, Longford football county. And you're saying, right, we're going to sacrifice the amount of money that we have and like say the quality, maybe, like, you know, there's already fixture headaches about club championships, whatever, for football, to become strong at hurling. And if fans, if the population are all like, we want to be a successful football county, why are you handcuffing us with this?
But what's the handcuffing? I mean, it happens on its own. I'm talking about money and resources going into underage level at all clubs to provide resources so that people have the option to do it. And if it becomes a thing where it develops enough that people want to play hurling and more hurling clubs develop and all that, then it will naturally have the support anyway, because they're rising together.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen on it. It's not just going to be, all right, every team has to have clubs now and you have to be good at it as well. That can't happen on its own. This is a 100-year project.
I know, but I'm just saying now at the minute, like, if you're like, right, go to whoever, use the example of Sligo or whatever, it's like you set aside extra budget to develop the hurling at the expense of football. Would people want that in Sligo?
Yeah.
And
perhaps
also,
not, but do you not have to look at the overall fact that this great sport of hurling has to be promoted and ideally blossom across the country? Is that not a greater aim than Sligo making it to a Connacht final or whatever?
If you're a Sligo footballer or a Sligo fan, probably not. I mean, this is different as well. Like, I'm saying this obviously as it's only just playing devil's advocate about like the whole idea that, you know, you should be doing more of this. Like, it really does come from GAA Central Council, so maybe it's that way it's done. It's like you're allocating it directly.
That's what I was going to say,
and you're not taking away from what you have, what each county board has. But it is just an argument. Like, I mean, you ask me, would I rather Cavan become kind of decent at hurling or Cavan win the Ulster Championship next year? It'd be Cavan win the Ulster Football Championship next year. It's not. Now, obviously, it'd be great for Cavan hurling to blossom or whatever, but at the same point in time, if it takes away from the possibility of winning the football championship for the next few years, you're like, nah. That's what everyone who was born in Cavan grows up dreaming of success.
But it's sad, though. I mean, when you watch that on Sunday and Saturday, you watch those games and you watch the show on Monday night and you're from Cavan and Longford, do you not feel sorry that you're not part of it?
I'm on the outside. And the reason you're growing up dreaming,
it doesn't have to be like that either. Yeah. You know what I mean? These traditions came from once, they can come again. You know what I mean?
And the reason you're dreaming of Cavan winning the Ulster Football Championship is because you haven't been given even the chance, even dream about Cavan winning the hurling championship, you know? Yeah. So it begins at, like, it does begin at grassroots. It ultimately...
But it doesn't have to be at the, like, what I, like, there's, that was a, the competitor's tweet that I was talking about. Like, you know, that is, it's a fair point and it's something that has to be crossed. But there's nobody suggesting, I don't think anyway, and I hope they're not, that hurling needs to be spread at the expense of football.
No.
You know what I mean? I feel like that we do have room for two thriving sports, and a lot of counties do prove that, you know?
Yeah. Mm.
I just meant on a very basic level, if the county board's like, I have €100 here, I can put it into something to do with making our footballers better because we're a football county, or I can put the €100.
But that's what, but as a amateur organisation that is built around volunteerism and all, that is unfair on the people who want to represent, who don't have a choice, by the way, as well, because of the way the GAA is structured, that you have to play for your local club and you have to play for your local county, that you can't just say, oh, well, that's not available to you. And yeah. I think if 400 kids around the country want to go and pick up a hurl after this weekend, after last weekend, that needs to happen 100 times for it to make any impact. I understand that. But I'd like those 400 kids to have the opportunity to play the game in their own country.
In their own country.
Their own country.
A case of daylight robbery. Oh, this shouldn't happen. That is disgraceful.
This is outrageous.
That is disgraceful. Disgraceful.
The decision
that's disgraceful.
This is all wrong. This is all wrong.
Oh, this shouldn't happen. That is disgraceful. Disgraceful.
Now, we are frequently told that hurling is evolving and constantly changing, although some of us non-hurling folk don't exactly have a breeze as to what is actually happening to the greatest sport in the world. Trademark. Thankfully, riding to the rescue of the ignorant unwashed is our resident GAA nerd, Morris Brosnan. Morris, can I ask the question that why the hell are these games so high scoring?
Resident GAA nerd. it's a good question. Like, and it's like, you know, even a look at the weekend's games, say the Cork game, there was 56 scores in that game, which is, I think, equals the championship record. So, but in saying that, like, there's one view of looking at this game is incredibly high scoring and making a massive assumption on that, and there's actually a difference between that and looking, you know, in depth as to why, what's going on here. So, like, does this, in Congress last year, there was a motion to get the slitter heavier because people are worried that the slitter is too light.
Mm.
But then, and actually, like, there's some really good analysis of this out there, which this year, particularly, I think the increase in actual analysis of hurling has been great. Like, compared to we've all loved, you know, the pontificating about how great hurling is, but sometimes it's kind of nice to know what actually happened there, as opposed to, you know, and that there's been some, like, Chris O'Connor and RTE has done some, like, Trojan work there. So he, for example, has said that 16 of scores in the entire weekend, that's 100 out of 130 scores, only 16 came from outside the 65.
Okay.
So if a lighter sitter doesn't account for that.
Okay.
So, and I think that has out across games because you've seen the input of inside forwards. It's kind of, you know,
is it just bad defending?
No, because I think it's such a hard job to be a defender in hurling right now because, like football, if you can get somebody isolated one-on-one in 50 yards of space, it's so hard to stop that player. You know what I mean? So say, everywhere you see, like, this massive drop-off where, like, Galway are the classic example now, they can really condense outside the field. Like, you get Joe Whelan working back, working really hard. And because of that, the likes of Cooney or the likes of Glynn have, like, 60 yards of space around them. It's one-on-one in 60 yards of space. So if, previously, if you break a ball, like in football, if you break a ball, generally there's more bodies around there than after the knot that you would be okay. But if now, it's so isolated, it's so, like, you're talking about one-on-one battles that more often than not, it's going to be really hard. So you see that pays out across, you know, across hurling, that these one-on-one, the massive space with inside forwards, and you got these specialist forwards. Then you've also just got general stuff, like you've got an increase in strength and conditioning, an increase in quality of hurlers, an increase in the quality of hurlers, like all that stuff will generally throw out to be more scoring. It's also, like, it's not a bad thing to have more scores. If anything, it's great. Like, I don't think a sitter should be lightened. I don't think you should necessarily, you know, scrutinize the quality of defending when they probably have the hardest job in a hurling pitch in a minute.
Mm. Why, in your opinion, if it is, you know, these one-on-one and defenders isolated against attackers is so dangerous, why are we not seeing in hurling what we see in football, where people just decide to flood defences?
I think it just comes down to, like, you know, like the standard of game. Like in football, it's just like basic physics. Like in football, you can't move a ball 80 yards in the flick of a switch. It's just not possible. In hurling, you can. A sweeper can't cover the same amount of ground purely because of that fact of how quickly the ball can be moved. And also, you know, your shooting range. So say this happened in basketball, for example, the shooting range got revolutionized by the reason that people brought out bodies, because you don't want somebody who could do what we're talking about, shooting from 60 yards or flying the ball over from outside the 65, like these long range point taking. So that's why, for example, Conor Cleary would follow somebody like Joe Cannon, because Joe Cannon can put the ball over from outside the 65 or further off left or right. So you have to, you follow him out and you make all that space, but you leave that space open behind you because you have to. You don't have an option. So say, for example, in football, you don't have that option. And that's why you see so many bodies behind the 45, because that is the traditional shooting zone. Same thing in basketball. You see a load of people, they used to use a three, like the D, that used to be their line. But then you get a player like Steph Curry who revolutionizes where he shoots 3 points from. And all of a sudden, defenses then have to react to that. But right now, the movement, the condensing a pitch and moving a lot of bodies around, this, like Kilkenny were the masters of this. Like Kilkenny were brilliant at bring like a very kind of versatile half forward line who didn't really play as half forwards. And even Cork played about four midfielders at the minute. Like this is all reactions to you don't want to lose the battle in that kind of middle ground. And because of that, it's like a natural progression is that inside forwards have more value. And that's why a guy like Aaron Galan has the strength that he does, because all of a sudden he's got a huge amount of space. And it's why, controversially, corner forwards in football are becoming redundant, because they don't have that space. There's far more bodies around them with way more progress. So using them correctly might mean they have to come 40 yards out the pitch to get on the ball, or it means they have to win a ball cleanly, which isn't the case in hurling.
We only had one winner at the weekend. Well, hurling was the obvious winner, but there is one team through to the All-Ireland final in Limerick. What struck you about them and how they managed to ultimately see off Cork?
It's funny, like I was thinking about this earlier today, and I guess like all year we're hearing about how brilliant Limerick's backroom team is, like not just the whole management team. So there's been a lot said about like Kinnerk, and we don't really understand that. We just have to look from the outside in. Like Kinnerk, Joe O'Connor, who's a former Irish Athletics, he's doing their strength and condition. But then, you know, we also talk about like Karen Curry, who's the psychologist who worked with Paul O'Connell, if anybody has read that book. And what she stressed was process. And that's a buzzword that me and you might balk at. But a process is just something kind of like, all it is some repetitive, like you carry out your task to the best of your ability. And like ultimately everything is just a process. Like it's just, there's a system. If you can stick to your system, goes it. So for example, like Daniel Kearney, who's a hurler with Cork, Daniel Kearney has a process for shooting. Like that's, he does a thing. And about 2 years ago, he realized that this was in, I think Dennis Walsh wrote it, but there's an article on Sunday, this is kind of fascinating. Like, so Kearney has got a process for shooting. He realized he was mishitting a lot of his shots, or rather his brother pointed out to him, William used to play for Cork as well. And so all he did to change that, the process itself was fine. He just made his hurl a couple of ounces heavier. He didn't add any sort of weight to it. We're talking minuscule, like this is half a bag of sugar. We're talking like tiny, tiny weight added to the hurl. And it totally changed his game. That would, this is basic. It's like a golf swing. And this that same principle, that's applicable across Ireland. So like Limerick are the best example of that. Like Limerick go, Richie Hogan scores a goal against Kilkenny. They stick to their process. The system stays the same. So they don't panic. They rattle off 3 points. They keep playing. They know what they're good at. At the weekends, they're 6 points down. They bring on Shane Dowling. They bring on Casey. But the system, or like, I don't want to keep using that word because people can kind of like systems has become kind of this weird word that gets attacked as if it's all been reduced to systems. But it's not like, there's no negative connotation to a system. The tactical approach that Limerick took never really changed. They stuck to their system, and they understand to an extent where they're completely comfortable in it. So even if you're 6 points down, somebody like Shane Dowling comes on. And Shane Dowling is another example of that. We spoke to Shane Dowling last year, and he said, one of the questions was, do you practice your freeze? And he said, no, hardly ever. But what I do practice is visualization and my technique. I'm not hitting.
That sounds a lot like he's practicing freeze. Technique and visualization.
His point was, I'm not going out and I'm not in 100 sitters over the bar in training. I'm going out and I'm hitting 5 or I'm hitting 10. But the whole point is that I'm visualizing, I'm hitting this free. We're 6 points down in an All-Ireland semi-final. I'm coming on, I'm fresh off the bench, a minute left, I'm hit with a long range free. And because I know my technique perfectly, I'm going to stick to my process here. And he bangs it over the bar and ends up basically swinging the game for Limerick.
Briefly on Clare, the changing point, well, how they arrested their decline, I was told on television, was by playing Colm Galvin as a sweeper. Is this true?
Yeah, I mean, the reservation, there was so many, you could see a lot of people didn't even want to say sweeper. Like, there was a lot of swarming and this kind of, you know,
yeah.
Oh, they dropped the man back, or it was like, there's nothing like a sweeper. It's like both teams had ended up with a sweeper. Aidan Hart was left free, so he dropped off, or at times McInerney, like Galway's, and a lot of times that's your problem. Like Colm Galvin was 100% a sweeper, and quite rightly, because what we were talking about there, like that, if Clare had allowed all that space in front of, you're talking about hurlers like Glynn, Cooney, Whelan, with nobody there, you're just fighting a losing battle. And it's like I know Pat O'Connor and McInerney have come in for some bit of criticism, and it's kind of unfair. Like, when you genuinely try and grasp the challenge that they have, like the task that they have, like, do you mark a player like that from the front and then a ball goes over the top with somebody like Glynn who crazy out of the sky and it's a goal? Like, your options are quite limited, but at least if you have a man in front of you, you know you can mark a man from behind and you can break a ball, which you can't do on the subverse of that. So that's where, like, a sweeper comes in handy. When it doesn't come in handy is when you've got a team like Galway who that sweeper either A, isn't quite good at his, like, possession, like his passing the ball, or also somebody's just not used to be an extra man. So you could see that when Cork played Limerick the first time and Mark Coleman ended up being the free man, you all of a sudden get this situation where you've got a free man who doesn't really look comfortable being a free man, and kind of like that, ideally you have your best passer as your free man.
Yeah, that's what did Galvin do well?
That's what he's, and I wouldn't for a second criticize Galvin, but like, a lot of Galvin's use of the ball was like wasteful. He put the very first ball, he put it over the sideline. But eventually, when you have got that, like, it's there's nothing you can buy or nothing you would want more on a hurling field, especially in Seamless Cow, than time. And when you are not being picked up like a man, you'd have time. So for example, in hindsight, I bet Galway probably wished they'd pushed up and played 7-on-7 there. So put somebody up on thing. When you look at the use of their own sweeper, because Conlon still came into the game in the second half and Galway actually had a sweeper, therefore your sweeper's not as effective, whereas Glynn Cooney's influence totally went. Like, and I know he eventually came after 15 minutes and then came back on. But when you got somebody like Galvin, who ultimately has got time and therefore can, you know, he picked out Shane O'Donnell's score where he threw John Hambury to the floor, sit out in front of it. Like, he was able to kind of wait a second, let Shane O'Donnell, and all Shane O'Donnell did there was run straight at him. The run itself wasn't that intelligent. It was just the fact that everything is slowed down because a man on the ball can pick his pass and then then O'Donnell does the rest from there.
Okay, two questions for you now. One, we assume that Clare will do this again. It worked again, so they'll probably play Galvin as a sweeper again. What does Micheál Donoghue do?
Yeah, like, it's a great question. Like, either it's kind of like, you know, you stick or twist. Like, do you drop a man back in front of John Conlon, which that's probably what they will do. So say, like,
they'll match up a sweeper by playing their own sweeper.
I would say so, yeah. Like, okay. You take advantage of the fact that you now have a chance to curtail full forward as dominant as somebody like John Conlon. And then, like, you don't know, McInerney, like, the word is that he was on crutches after the game. If that's true, I don't see how he's going to play next week when you've got a muscle injury. So if that's true, you got to change your centre back. That means Mannion probably picks up Tony Kelly. That means he's not going to hold the centre. And Mannion's a superb hurler, but you don't want him to hold the centre. So if you've got a sweeper, you can now play like a traditional centre half, the way Hannon for Limerick is a centre half, in terms of somebody that they will take a pound of flesh if you try and run down that middle channel. So that's what you would hope. That's what you would hope would happen from a Galway perspective. But otherwise, what you can do is you can push somebody up. So if you bring in somebody like Sean Loftus, or, I mean, I don't understand, like, some of the changes for Galway were weird. You got Brian Kincannon was man of the match in his first game this year and he doesn't even come on, but they bring back on Joe Cooney. Like, you don't, that, and that, like, that's what you would hope from a Galway perspective again, is that they would use those kind of options. So either you do play an extra player who might be able to push up on, and then that totally takes Galway out of the game because he's occupied by a man, or you use it to curtail Clare's main attacking threat, which is something like John Connell.
Okay, great. I feel I've been given this great blinding insight to say. I'm going to go forth in the name of hurling.
I love the fact that anyone who takes like a remote interest in the actual in-game actions becomes a nerd. Like,
absolutely.
That's my jam.
Absolutely. Many thanks for GA Nerd and Morris Brosnan.
What an evening, what a performance. One of the greatest wins ever by the Rossies. Up to Pier Stadium. Goal went 6-1 on to beat us by 12 points. What happened? The Rossies arrived into town. What did we do? We blew them into Galway Bay.
We've got a late bolter in the GA Nerds in situ stakes. Mick, you've got our sure stats of the week.
Yeah, sure. Official statistics partner of the GA have sent us in their stats. Now, actually, sometimes I send them these requests and I go, how the hell are they going to have responses to my these wacky things that I'm looking for? But somehow they always seem to deliver, because this weekend I was struck by, I was thinking possibly an inherent unfairness in the layout of Croke Park. Because shooting into Hill 16 seemed to just be this impossibility. If you look at the Galway-Clare match, Galway shot 12 wides in the first half, which is unbelievable, into Hill 16. In the first half of extra time, Clare shot 7 wides in 10 minutes of hurling, yeah. Which is quite incredible. Now, all of these aren't the fault of the Hill, but you'll see that the umpires were overworked with Hawkeye, I think, went 5 times over the course of the game, all down that end. And you're wondering, is the wind swirling there? Because the rest of the stadium is so sheltered. Does that affect things, especially in hurling, light ball, etc.? So I looked for some stats, and actually, here's the canal end accuracy. In the Clare-Galway game was 68.8%. In Hill 16, 65.1%. A 3.7% difference, which is pretty, you know, it's not huge, but it is a difference. Cork versus Limerick, even bigger. 62.8% accuracy into the canal end. 56.9% into the hill. That's a 5.9% difference. And also overall at the weekend, it was 65.3 versus 60.6 and a 4.7% difference. That over when there's so many scores, that does add to a lot.
But that scoring.
They also sent me historical shooting accuracy.
Oh, wow.
To see if this is an ongoing issue or just not. And it's really not.
Okay.
So there is more overall 59.5% hurling shooting accuracy into the canal end versus 58.3% into the hill, which is only 1.2% in the difference.
Okay.
So maybe I'm the only one who was interested in that particular stat, but,
no, but if
sure had it when I asked for them anyway.
If it's a windy day and you're a captain in Croke Park and you win the toss and you decide whether to shoot into the Hill 16 end in the first half or second half, would you... It's not a guess, is it? I mean, would you make your decision based on what you know?
I suppose historically it's not that huge a difference, but last week it was like 5, 6%, so... Maybe that was because it was a windier day,
yeah,
or there was a swirlier wind. So maybe you're judging on that. But then again, at least you have them to know and then decide whether you want it in the first or second half. The other stat, which I think everybody will have thought a little bit about, was the difference in Clare's puckouts. Donald Toohey was intercepted a few times in the first half that led to Galway scores when Clare were in their collapsing stage. And one of the things that people were most impressed by is how his performance, which included 2 or 3 great saves, also included a complete and utter turnaround in his puckouts. But I didn't realise until I asked Shore just how amazing the difference in those stats were. So Clare won just 55% of their own puckouts in the first half. Very, very low.
Mm-hmm.
Galway only won 57, so it wasn't... There was obviously the short puckouts that are lost are the ones that you see more of. So that's kind of the more striking aspect of it, rather than just the stat itself. But in the second half, 100% of Clare's puckouts,
they won.
Were all won. Yeah, they won 17 out of 17 in the second half. They also won 50% of Galway's 22 puckouts. So that will show you the difference in the possession stats in the second half. Overall, in extra time, then Clare won 83% of their own puckouts. And Galway won 46% of theirs.
Yeah.
So just a big, big difference in tactics as well, though. I mean, that obviously is Clare having the sweeper it's a little
moving
bit.
Moving Colin Gavin back in.
Just the 100 puckouts in that game.
It's amazing, isn't it?
100 puckouts in a game of hurling. Possibly for the first time.
It's bonkers.
Yeah.
Especially when you consider that there were 100 puckouts and the score was only 130-130 compared to Cork against Limerick, which was a higher scoring game and had a few are good. I think it was 90 puck outs.
I think it was 97. Actually. Sorry, 97. Yeah.
Yeah. Never mind.
This and lower shooting accuracy, according to the stats here.
Those stats comes from Sure, the official statistics partner of the GAA. Right, it's time to look ahead of the weekend and guess the spreads.
It's about those four keywords: commit, focus, believe, and you can achieve. Carlo have achieved after 33 years in the wilderness, and well done.
Right, lads, guess the spread. Rules are as always: 1 point for getting it right, 2 points for getting the number bang on. We've got five games, four Super 8 games, and then the Galway Clare replay. We're going to start with Farley. Galway against Monaghan in the Super 8s.
Galway minus two.
Okay, Mick.
I kind of was going to say minus two. I never stick with the same one. Why would it be any higher, though? Galway minus one, but it's definitely minus two.
It is definitely Galway minus two.
Yes. That was an easy one, actually. No other score made sense.
An early two-point lead for Farley. Kerry Kildare, to you, Mick.
I'll go Kerry minus four.
Okay, Mark.
Kerry minus five.
Kerry minus eight is the answer.
What?
That's ridiculous.
That's outrageous.
How is it? Kildare are missing Daniel Flynn. They're already out of the championship. Kerry are at home. They need to overturn a five-point score difference. It all makes sense.
Do you see that there's a good possibility? I was reading it on RTE yesterday. There's about five or six different score lines that could happen that would leave Monaghan and Kerry on the same score difference with the same goal scored and the same points scored.
Then we
have to have a playoff the day before the All-Ireland Hurling Final.
Fun never stops.
I'm doing these chronologically, so a brief interlude from the football for the Galway Clare replay.
Sorry, no, they'd have to have a playoff on the football semi-final week, and then the semi-final would against Dublin would have to play the day before the All-Ireland Hurling Final.
Galway against Clare in the Hurling replay. Mark Farley gets first pick.
Galway minus... three.
Mick.
I'll say minus two.
Oh, he's back in at going minus two.
I thought I was going to go two.
Three is a lot there, yeah?
Yeah,
I don't think it was three last week.
It was five last week.
Was it?
It was five, yeah. Okay. Or
four. I was
going
to go
with
two, and I was like, ah. I don't know why you went.
3-2, is it?
Yeah, it's game on. And Donegal Tyrone, Mick.
Oh, Donegal Tyrone. God, that's a tough one.
Who's even the favourite?
I don't know. I'm going to go Donegal, biggest ever game. At home, minus one.
Donegal minus one. Okay, who are you saying?
You think Tyrone minus one, do you? We've never gone two different teams, yeah. I don't think.
See, I'm thinking Donegal are at home, so the most favourites, and they're Ulster champions. But when you consider how well Tyrone did against Dublin, Tyrone could be favourites now. No, can I go Donegal minus one as well?
You can. Both of you are wrong. It's Tyrone minus one.
Oh, he's gave you the right score.
So
wow, I think I'd be having a bit of Donegal there.
Yeah, so there's no points for that
Donegal
one.
Donegal were good in the last game.
I was going to guess no spread, which would have won it for me.
So here we go. Dublin against Roscommon at Croke Park. Farrelly gets the first pick.
No, he's first.
Right. Dublin minus 11.
Okay, Mick.
That's a good one. I have to go higher or lower. Minus 11. Dublin are going to be putting out a second team for the most part. Yeah, still going higher. Minus 12.
Dublin minus 12 is the
yes!
Right. That means, incredibly, we've had another fire skill, Mark Farley collapse. 3-0 up. Hazard 4-3.
5-3.
5-3, yeah, sorry, I've done the maths wrong. 5-3. Defeat is a defeat. Farley isn't going to bounce back from that. That is all we have time for on this week's show.
No, it was 4-3, actually. Sorry, you did the maths right.
Did I? Jeez, I'm easily manipulated as the arbiter of this game. Farley, hard luck.
There were so many there where I choked on the decision. I should have stuck with goal with minus two, which I had in my head. And
fade
I should have stuck
there.
With no
there,
handicap.
Thanks very much to Mark. Thank you, Mick. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to Bulls.ie Podcast on iTunes. Give us a rating, give us a subscription. All those things help us enormously. We're going to be back and talk to you next week.